This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the No No Never podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and this is the analysis show. We are looking back on the curtain opener of the Premier League season. It was the home defeat against champions and treble winners, Manchester City. We've got general reaction to that defeat. We're also looking at some specific talking points. That red card for Anas Zerouri, the first home player to be sent off in the Premier League for the Clarets. We look at the imposter that is Lyle Foster. What has happened to him this season? Who kidnapped Lyle Foster that we saw last year and replaced him with a little wizard that we had on the game on Friday? We look at the left-back scenario. Do we stick with Vitinho? Are we going to be able to get Matson in from Chelsea? Or is it going to be Charlie Taylor or an other? Muric versus Trafford. Surprised us with Trafford starting the game. Should it have been Muric? We debate that. And finally, we tackle the problem with the fan base. We'd look at the issues that clouded that game against Manchester City and the trouble that it caused. How are Burnley going to rescue their reputation? Let's go. So let's dive right in. We are joined this week by two of our regular panellists, Tom Whittaker. Tom, welcome.
Nice to be back. Nice to be talking about some actual football matches as well.
Yes, I love it. And of course, regular panellist and all-round good egg, George Poole. George, hello, hello. And friend of the stars, I would add.
Yeah, good evening. I know it's a surprise to see me back now. I've been mixing it with Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, but I did tell them I'm always going to be loyal to the No No Never podcast first and foremost. So good to see you guys.
Good. I did wonder whether you were going to get more expensive now for the podcast, but it's good to see you back. Let's dive straight in then. We are talking about the opening fixture of the Premier League season. It was that home tie against Manchester City. Probably the result we were expecting, but actually a performance and some stats that were maybe better than was expected. So let's recap. City, of course, 3-0 winners at Turf Moor. But that doesn't tell the full story. Burnley had 34% possession and 6 shots. Not too many of them on target, but still 6 shots nonetheless. We only had 365 passes as opposed to City's 706. And we didn't really have any clear-cut chances. But defensively, we did do a little bit better. Aerial duels won, we matched City 13 apiece. Tom, let's come to you first. I think it's probably the most enjoyable and optimistic we've ever felt coming off one of our many City defeats.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when we've played them in the past, obviously we get beat every time, but a lot of time it's just attrition, attack by defence. And I think there were moments in the game where we did show a bit of sort of attacking impetus, like we wanted to try and score a goal. The times that we've conceded the goals has killed us, really. Conceding so early and then the one just before half time. I think the second half was a bit of a non-event. But the period in between the first and second goals, well, there were moments where we really did trap City in their final third. They got a little bit rattled. We weren't letting them play out. And it was good to watch. You know, it was interesting. It was very unusual kind of team lineup and company employed. It was interesting to see. And that made it a bit more of an interesting watch as well. It wasn't just, as I say, stick 10 behind the ball and just try and keep the score down. We were trying to do a little bit more than that. Obviously, it didn't work out in the end. But yeah, I think you're right. I think interesting is probably the best word to describe it.
Yeah. Picking up on one of the comments that Tom said then, George, you talked about it being enjoyable. I think one of the things that struck most of us was that Vincent Kompany stuck to his principles and the DNA of that side. They didn't change the way that they played. They didn't go defensive. They didn't stick 11 men behind the ball. And they tried to play expansive football and they tried to get their pressing game going. And when the opportunity arose, they did try to press quite high as well. Were you expecting that or were you presently surprised?
No, I was expecting that completely. I think from the minute Vincent Kompany walked through the door, his principles were very clear and he was very clear in saying that those principles get stuck to no matter what. You know, there was times last season where one comes to mind where it was played to Josh Cullen at the edge of the box. He's given it away and the other team scored. After that, we played exactly the same. And it was interesting. There was a moment in the City game where we pretty much did exactly the same as that and it went out for a corner and we'd messed about with playing it out from the back and then it had gone wrong. But we saw then the next phase of play, we were still trying to do the exact same. So, no, we saw ourselves stick to our guns and it was really nice, like Tom said, to see us try and take the game to City. It wasn't a case of just defence versus attack. I thought it was quite an even game in terms of the mentality of both teams. Both teams wanted to go and try and win it.
Yeah. Who stood out for you particularly, George, in terms of performances?
Oh, I think this one's pretty easy. It's the same answer that many will give after the game. The striker who was playing up front for Burnley on Friday night, who I'm not sure I've ever seen before. it's certainly not that person we signed from South Africa in January. So this new striker was apparently called Lyle Foster. And he was absolutely tremendous. Literally unrecognisable from anyone I've ever seen play. And also in terms of the football, he was fantastic. So I'm sure we'll touch on him more later. But he was
Yeah, we have got him as one of our five talking points. So I'm sorry, I set you up for a fall there. Yeah, as soon as I said it, I was like, why am I asking that question when we're going to come and talk about that in a minute? So apart from our new imposter striker, Tom, who else stood out for you in terms of a solid performance? Let's go to the back. Defensively, how did you think? Anybody stand out for you there?
I thought Bale looked pretty comfortable. I thought he did a decent job overall on Haaland. I mean, I know Haaland scored twice, but I don't think that's down to like terrible defending or anything. The first one's a little bit soft. He gets there a bit quicker, but the second goal that he scored is just unbelievable. It's like, yeah, it's how ridiculous. Has he put that in the top corner like that from there? Just crazy. So I think by and large, I think it was quite an interesting duel between Haaland and Bale. I think he gave as good as he got. Alder Keel as well. Always looks impressive whenever he plays, and yeah, I thought both of them they were asked by Kompany to sort of push up and at times in the first half they were on the edge of Man City's area, you know, following their man and winning the ball really high, and they both looked pretty comfortable with that. I wasn't quite as sold on O'Shea the first time. No. I've seen him obviously play for us, and I guess it could just be teething issues because I'm sure he's not been asked to play from the back as much when he's been at West Brom as he is now, and I don't think we would have signed him if he wasn't comfortable at doing that job, or they didn't think that he could be comfortable at doing that job. But he did look to me a little bit less sure with the ball at his feet than the other two, and I think you saw that for the first goal as well. The corner, you know, he tries to take a touch and take it away from the attacker, and he ends up just rolling it out for a corner that he didn't need to give away, and then from that we're 1-0 down. So that was a bit of a worry. It'd be interesting to see. I wouldn't have thought we're going to line up with three centre-halves every week this season. I think that was more something for Man City, or maybe for when we play the quite the bigger clubs. So it'd be interesting to see how we did in a two, or even if he'll get in the team in a two. But he was perhaps a little bit of a question mark for me. But I thought Bayer and Alder Keel, for saying it's such a tough assignment as well, I thought they stepped up quite well.
Yeah, I did too. And I'll tell you who else I was impressed with, and I had question marks over him, Conor Roberts. He had a tough time in the back end of the last Premier League season, and I did wonder whether or not he was one of those Josh Brownhill kind of players where he's very, very good in the Championship, just not quite there for the Premier League. I thought he had one of the most competent performances I've seen him in the Premier League. I thought he handled it very, very well. He still managed to get up when he wanted to as well. His fitness seemed to be quite good as well. He seemed to be quite fast. He was tracking back quite a lot and match. I mean, listen, you can't, some of these City players are ridiculous. You just can't get anywhere near them. But he seemed to be tracking back pretty quickly and got some speed on him. So I was impressed with him. George, the centre-half pairing, Cullen and Berg, whoever he's called, Berge, Sander Berge. Tough start for him. Perfectly understandable considering he'd been at the club about 3 minutes when he got put in there. I thought until he started to blow a bit and looked a little bit tired, I think him and Josh Cullen in the centre are going to be an awesome pairing. Please tell me I'm not wrong.
No, I tend to agree. I know there's been a bit of criticism Berge after the game, but like you say, I mean,
unfounded, I think. Unnecessary, or at least unfair.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess people have high expectations. And once we've seen Cullen last season, and then you think, well, Berge has come in, you know, on a similar pedigree kind of player. So people wanted to hit the ground running. I thought he was okay. I didn't think he was bad, but I didn't think he was exceptional. And like you did say, it's such a tough game to come into and impress in centre midfield, because all you're doing is chasing shadows all game and trying to stick the offense in. So I thought he did well at times. You know, when he was on the ball, he looked more than confident. So, no, I think he'll turn into a really good signing. And to have them two as your two midfielders is just fantastic. For a club who theoretically should just be battling, you know, against relegation, you know, just been promoted, it's a fantastic midfield. And it frees up that place in front of them to sort of be interchangeable between the likes of Amdouni, Goodmanson, Brownhill, you know. So I think it's a really good midfield, and he'll only improve with these two weeks break between now and the Villa game.
I mean, I do still think if Cullen and Berge, their relationship develops that much, I think there's going to be a lot of games where Brownhill's appearance as a starter particularly is going to be restricted.
Well, I think he'll be starting week in, week out for West Ham, so I'm sure.
That's a good point, actually. What did we say in our group chat earlier? What's the minimum we can see? Anywhere near 20 million and we'll drive him there. Like, bye-bye, love you, bye.
Yeah, I think there's been... I think it's typical Twitter, like, people are either one way or the other, but, like, I really rate the guy. I think he's a good player. I still think he'll cut it at the Premier League for us. I really do. I do rate him. And West Ham aren't going to be signing someone who's only Championship quality. But like we did say, you know, 1 year left on his deal. Now, admittedly, they're going to try and renew it, but anywhere between 15 to 20 million. Yeah, I think that's a fair deal. We reinvest and move on, because like we mentioned in last week's podcast, we've not actually sold anyone for any money this summer, basically. So you look at how Wolves have got into a mess with financial fair play with their tradings. We don't want to be, you know, next summer where we can't spend any money because we need to sell and you know, balance the books. So yeah,
it was interesting. Sorry, go on, George. Sorry.
No, I'd just say a decent deal, 15 to 20 million. I'd take it and wish him very well.
I agree. It was interesting. I've been watching Mission to Burnley. I've finally got around to watching it, and I'm on episode 2, and it was interesting to hear Company and Alan Pace discussing the business side of the club and Company himself saying that every single year he wants to be in a position where they've got two or three assets that they can sell, and then the next one's just ready to step in their shoes. So, and I wonder whether, you know, Sander Berge coming in is just the next one and Brownhill can go. I guess my only criticism with that and worry with that, Tom, is that I thought we brought Sander Berge in to strengthen a position that we needed reinforcements. If we then go and sell Brownhill, we've really only really got Cullen and Berge who can do that in the middle. I don't think Jack Hook, he can cover. And he can do some substitute appearances, but I'd question where else our strength in depth coming in the centre. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it is. I think Cork has probably only got another season or two left in him. I think from what we've seen of Bastian, I'm not sure he's a Premier League player. I don't think Company thinks so either. I think you're right. I think we brought Berge in because we needed reinforcement in that area and we needed a bit more competition. And you know, I think at the minute it's all just paper talk, isn't it, with Brownhill? And he's had that link to West Ham in the past. And I don't really see him going unless we have got a replacement lined up. I don't really see that one, to be honest. But if it did happen, say we got an injury to Cullen or to Berge, then we'd be really light in that area. So I'm hoping that it is just going to stop there. I'd prefer to have him as certainly a squad depth. It was quite interesting. I think that he didn't start really. Considering he's probably one of the first names on the team sheet last year. Don't know if that's... And again, it's hard to judge because we've only played one game and it was against Man City. It's kind of hard to judge how we're going to set up the rest of the season. But I did think it was quite interesting that he wasn't a starter on Friday.
Same. Okay, well, let's leave general analysis there and let's move on to our 5 talking points. First up, Zorore Red. first player for Burnley to be sent off in a home Premier League game. He's likely to get, we presume it's going to be a three-match ban. He's going to miss the Villa and Spurs games in the league and Forest in the Cup. George, is it fair to say that it was A, a red, and B, that it wasn't malicious, but a striker doing a striker tackle? What was your judgment of the red card?
For me, I'd have sent him to a tanning booth because it was a straight orange card for me. It was one between yellow and red. I sort of had a perfect live position to see it because I'm on the front row of the long side upper and right by the centre circle. So it was right in front of us. And from a live view, it was your typical right professional foul, take one for the team, it's a yellow. Try to get the ball, but if you don't get there and you take his ankles, so what? You know, they're on the break. And the 4th minute by the time, you know what I mean? Like it was a yellow. It was a pure yellow. And then when I saw it on VAR, yeah, okay, he's got the back of his leg, but you're never going to do any damage. Like we stood to the back of someone's leg. Like I really don't see. There's been a bit of hoo ha about it, but for me, it wasn't a definite straight red, and it was just indicative of the entire game. For me, I was so fed up with VAR within minutes. It was.
Oh really?
Honestly, okay. I can't stand the thing. You know, with City's goal, waiting. Oh, we're checking for handball, and then but when they said that, they kicked off within a second because it takes so long. You know, it was just I hate it. We've had one game back, and I just can't stand it already. It just ruins the flow of the game completely.
Oh dear, well that went a little bit west. Tom, rescue us. Poor Georgia sent us into depths of despair. We've got onto its first game of the season. We've got into VAR. I didn't even have any problem with VAR. So let's try and swerve away from that. Bring us back. What was your take? An orange card, is that fair? I thought it was.
I think, same as George at the time, it didn't seem a lot to it. But I thought it was maybe a little bit harsh to be upgrading that, just considering where we are. It's the 94th minute. The game's already over. But I don't think we can really complain. You know, it's just such a poor tackle. I think, as you said, it's a forward tackle. You know, I don't think he's trying to do him, but he's just, I mean, you're never going to catch Kyle Walker in a foot race anyway. So far behind him, it's just a really bad tackle. And when you catch someone that high and you're out of control like he was, then, you know, you're going to give the referee a decision to make. And I think as soon as he went to the screen, you know what's going to happen. So. Yeah, just a learning curve for him, really. And it's kind of interesting, you know, we've been speaking in the summer about how we've brought in all these wingers and do we really need that many? And it kind of showed at the end of the game there that we've got four wingers on the pitch, no strikers. You've got Zorori playing in a, you know, through the middle, which is not his normal position. And I wonder if that kind of contributed to, you know, not necessarily to that tackle, but the fact that he's playing out of position and he's doing an unfamiliar job. You know, has that made a difference to where he's positioning? Is that why he's kind of not been on the catch walker? It was a really bad end of the game. I had no idea what we were trying to do. It was a very strange setup. It just seemed like a case of, I've bought all these wingers, so I'll try and use them. And yeah, I felt a bit sorry for Zorori on that basis as well.
Yeah, I mean, I did see, before I come on to this point, I probably should, before I get an angry letter from the club, it wasn't my point about the strikers challenge. That was Vincent Kompany's point. I did steal it off him. So apologies, VK. I did. Blatantly steal your material, and I've just been accused of passing it off on my own. It was interesting. I did definitely saw this on Twitter, and I'm so sorry to whoever's listening to this, and I couldn't remember who it was who'd seen it, because I can't credit you directly. Please at me and shout at me. Somebody had sent a tweet saying that towards the end of the game, it did feel a little bit like we had square pegs and round holes. There was no noticeable striker on the pitch, about a million wingers, and it's probably no surprise at that. And actually, no obvious system being played either. So it was quite difficult. I imagine that's quite unsettling for a defence because they don't really know who's protecting in front of them. And then obviously the space is created and you've got a striker trying to do a striker's challenge. That's probably a good point. Let us know what you think, listeners. Straight red, one of Georgie Boy's orange cards, or grossly unfair. You know how to get in touch with us. Drop us your comments on the video below and let us know what you thought. Number two, George, I'm going to have to come to you with this because you've already talked about it. Talking point number two from the City game, who kidnapped Lyle Foster and who is this imposter who played on Friday night? Please expand on your points. What a performance by our man. He was phenomenal and well-deserved man of the match.
Absolutely. I mean, we say it in jest, but he genuinely looked different. Like I'm just saying,
physically looks different. Yeah, yeah.
He looks so much healthier. He had
leaner,
like
fitter.
He'd gotten rid of his like 40-year-old's beard. Like, he just looked a new man completely. And when he was on the ball and trying to make tackles and, you know, shoulder barging against the defenders, he was so strong, so quick. Like, I was honestly sat there and I was blown away he was that good. In terms of his actual play with the ball, he was running in behind. He did that dancing move down the left and then cut inside and almost scored at the cricket field end. It was just, honestly, it was breathtaking. Really, yeah. It really was. And you know what? Going into that game, as we will discuss further in a special episode, I'd watched the Missions to Burnley doc, and there was that interesting quote in there from Company saying, well, you know, people are criticising the 12 million that we've spent now, but he'll be the cheapest starting striker in the Premier League next season. That's not even like the entry level to buy a striker. I mean, the fact that we're discussing, you know, 20 million for Brownell, you know, the market has shifted.
Yeah, definitely.
In recent years. So his point there made me think he's going to get the nod ahead of, you know, Ajay Rodriguez on Friday night. And it did turn out that way. And, you know, within 30 minutes, you were already convinced it was the right call. You've seen the work he's putting in over the summer. And I think it was The Athletic reported he'd been doing a lot of work one-on-one with Craig Bellamy, both in terms of like role as a striker, but also on his mental health as well, because he talked about having homesickness and stuff. So it sounds like Bellamy's been a real right-hand man for Foster. And yeah, didn't it half show on Friday? It was just superb.
Yeah, definitely. Has he won you over, Tom? And actually, did he get rid of the 40-year-old beard because he was feeling he'd seen Tom Whittaker's famously spectacular facial hair and realised he couldn't compete, so got rid of it? Is that what it was? We've been talking about this in our group. We've been talking about this in our group chat today. We're all feeling very unfit. Well, I'm not. Neither is Charlotte either. But the rest of the boys are all very feeling very underwhelmed, very pressured by Tom's facial hair. Has he won you over? And how did you like the link up with him, Amdouni, and Colley O'Shaw? Am I pronouncing that right? Thank you, boys.
The only thing that I'd say about Foster is, I think I agree with everything George said. You know, he looks a lot faster, sort of trimmer, stronger. He looks like the physical attributes are there, which they didn't look like they were in January. There's still a big question mark over, is he going to get his goals this season? It was quite interesting. He was out on the wing and not playing through the middle against Man City. I'm guessing that was more for pace than anything else, or maybe because we were playing with a central striker up top. So it'd be interesting to see if he is playing through the middle against Villa, for example. But, you know, I watched a couple of the friendlies and he, again, it was a similar story there. You know, he did look more on it, but he never really looked like he was going to score. So that'd just be my question mark, but we're not going to know the answer to that until he's had a few games playing in his preferred position. So jury's still out on that one. But yeah, you can definitely see there's been a big improvement, a big physical transformation this summer. It was interesting, actually, the front three that he chose. You know, I could see him having Benson on the bench because he's not played much in pre-season, and he did that a lot last season, even used him as an impact sub. But I thought it was really interesting that he went for Colley O'Shaw over Zorori. You know, Zorori, one of the players last season. Colley O'Shaw, I don't think, was even really starting many games for Espanyol last season. So it's quite a big call to put him in. But he did look good. He looked very raw, but he was exciting. You know, he's very, again, he's very quick, very direct. He played well in the Mainz game that I went to as well. So maybe that was part of the thinking. And the same for Amdouni as well. He looks a good player. He's got amazing feet. He's really quick feet. He showed some really nice flashes. But again, maybe just taking a little bit of time to go up to the level, just lacking a little bit of end product. But Man City's not really the game to judge players on in that regard. So, yeah, I, from the way they played, actually, especially in the last half an hour of the first half, I wouldn't be shocked if you decided to play that same front three again against Villa.
Yeah, I agree. A couple of points from that. Firstly, I've just realised that I forgot to upload your match day diary for the Mainz game. Is that how you pronounce it? Apologies, I will. Listeners, just tune in. Doesn't matter if it's a week ago. It was fun. And George goes to cathedrals and drinks beer and it's all very exciting. Secondly, I'm going to put something to you. I think that Vincent Kompany treated Friday night as a final pre-season friendly. I think that explains him saying before the game that this will be the worst you will see us play all season, with the worst team, however you put it. The team selection, the formation changes, the substitutes that he brought on, and some of those player choices, I think he knew absolutely no that there was unlikely to win that game. So he, with the Luton game being postponed the week after, he was going to treat that as another pre-season friendly. It gives Trafford big game experience in front of the Sky cameras, gets him bedded in. He said it because I was very surprised. We'll come on to that next, why he got the nod over Murich. I think he treated that as a pre-season friendly. I'm convinced of it.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay. Talking point number three. Left back problems. At the moment, we are in a position where it's either Vitinho or Charlie Taylor, neither of whom we think are strong enough to do it, particularly a whole season at this level. George, it was Vitinho who got the nod at the weekend. I think he did all right in patches, but for me was definitely one of the weaker links in the side. We don't know yet whether we're going to get Mattson. Mattson came on for the last minute again, last 10 minutes in the Liverpool game last night for Chelsea, which is worrying from our perspective. What do you think our plans are for a left back? Will it be Mattson? If not, surely there is another one coming through the door.
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you? You really would, because, I mean, as you just alluded to, Charlie Taylor, for me, it's pretty indicative, the fact that he didn't start against Man City and we played a right back at left back. Like, Charlie Taylor's not in company's plans to be a starter this season. No. And I can understand why, because for me, Taylor is a man who, say he went to Everton tomorrow, he could be their starting fullback for the entire season. Because
George and Everton, honest to God.
it's an easy one, isn't it? Because, you know, he plays exactly like a dice left back would want to play, bombing up the wing. You know, he'd end up walking off the field with just white paint on his boots. Now, in company's system, it just doesn't work. So we do need somebody. I will just preface that with saying I think Vitinho played well on Friday night and I actually rate him. The only reason I wouldn't want him to start this season there is because, you know, it's a right-footed player at left-back. But for me, I quite like Vitinho. And you can tell company really likes him as well just by how much he does play him. I think it's a bit like back in the day, you know, we had criticism from Burnley fans of Arfield, you know, being played in centre-mid and stuff. But he was clearly rated by Dyche because of his versatility. You know, you have the same with James Milner. And now with Vitinho, not to compare Vitinho to James Milner too much. That's an odd one, isn't it? You didn't think you'd hear that. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Vitinho, but we do need a left back, I'm afraid.
Agree.
It's not going to be Ian Mattson, let's be honest, because Pochettino's the kind of man who Mattson would, you know, be at the top of his agenda, a young player, someone who could have incredible sell-on value later down the line.
Yeah,
he's going to get the minutes at Chelsea.
Yeah, I completely agree. Okay, I don't think there's much more to say on left back, so let's move on to talking point number four. Our keepers. Tom, back over to you. If we take aside my conspiracy theory of the week of Vincent Kompany treating Manchester City at home as a pre-season friendly, for all the banter that you want, were you surprised that Trafford got the nod over Murich? And secondly, how did you rate his performance?
I wasn't surprised in the slightest, to be honest. I know the majority of fans would have played Murich, but for me, the money that was spent on Trafford, we're only going to spend that money if we're bringing him in as number one. We're not going to spend 15, rising to 90 million on a reserve goalie. It's just not going to happen. From everything that I've seen from Trafford, he's very ambitious. He's very self-confident. I don't think he would have come here if he hadn't got assurances that he was going to be number one. And I think as well, I get the impression that company is perhaps not 100% convinced with Muric. I think he came in last season because we couldn't get that Verbruggen. I think that was his first choice.
Oh, of and course. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah. And so the fact that we've gone in again for goalies at the start of this summer, you know, we tried to get Verbruggen again, didn't we? And he went to Brighton. I think that tells you that company's not 100% sold on him. There was that game last season against Watford as well, where he got subbed at halftime and it was like, oh, he was injured and or ill or whatever. And I wasn't convinced then and I'm still not convinced now. I just think he's not, he's a little bit shaky, Muric. And I thought Trafford did...
a little bit shaky.
A little bit shaky, yeah, you know.
Not that we want to underplay it.
We all enjoyed it last season and I think people got used to him, you know, he's the way he is. He's very kind of laid back. This, you know, he puts the fear of God into you at times, doesn't he? But I think we saw from Trafford that he can play that style as well. And I thought he was good with his feet. He's picking passes out. He's not really got a chance for any of the goals. Funnily enough, I don't think he had a great amount to do other than the goals. I don't recall him making loads of saves or anything like that. I think we saw that he's going to slot in fine. I think he's company's kind of keeper. It's too early for me to say whether I think he's an upgrade or not on Muric, but I'm pretty sure that company views him as that. And that's why I wasn't surprised that he started.
Yeah, I think I was just thinking that you're very much used to the well-established management style, that it's a player's shirt to lose. And we saw it for 10 years under Dash, with the odd exception about players who just he had his favourites and wouldn't drop. But I think most people expected company to give Muric the opportunity to at least prove himself, and maybe the extra competition would do. I think if I'm being super critical, I wasn't as convinced with Trafford's passing game as Muric. I think when Muric is playing, the ball flowed more, particularly the relationship between Muric and Bayer. I thought those two passing between them were excellent. We missed a little bit of that. But that's not to say that Trafford won't get that ability and he won't develop those relationships with his two centre-halves. I think, for me, company might have to get a very settled, established centre-half pairing. That triangle spine at the base of defence is really important if you're going to start playing out the back. So I think he's probably going to have to settle on Bayer plus whoever plays alongside him pretty quickly for that relationship to develop. But yeah, it's an interesting one. We'll see how we go. Other than that, I think there was, if I remember rightly, there was a save quite early on in the first half where Trafford had to dive down to his right-hand side quite low. And we all said at the time that would do his confidence a lot of good. But you're right, other than that.
Yeah, and I think that it was offside, wasn't it, in the end, like you say, it was. If it had been onside, it would have been a brilliant save, yeah.
But either way, just to have that ability, I think, was good.
Yeah, for sure. Just one point to say, you said about his passing didn't convince you quite as much of Muric. I think you're comparing apples and oranges because you think the teams we were playing last season, Muric, you know, think of that game against Preston where he's allowed to play in midfield because there's just no pressure on the ball and then go to that to play in the best team in the world. And can there be any games last season where we had 30% possession? I don't think there would have been. So perhaps we'll see a bit more of Trafford's range when we get a home game against a team where we do manage to control possession.
Maybe the second half of Sheffield United away, but other than that, no. excellent. Okay, final talking point from the game. And it's one, I'm sorry to end on a slightly disappointing note, but it's a really important one that we have to talk about. And that is fan trouble. George, you sit as chairman of the Clarets Trust. This has got to be something that's got to be particularly close to your heart. Three incidents. First and foremost, before a ball was even kicked off, we were back to having a good number of fans. I don't think it is a minority. I don't think that's fair to say. Good fans booing, players taking the knee in a declaration of anti-racism and support for people who suffer from racism. And that was booed by a selection of the fans. We then had a lighter thrown at Rico Lewis halfway through the first half, I think, picked up by the Sky cameras, and we are expecting probably a club fine for that. And an attempted pitch invasion, which I have to say was dealt with remarkably quickly by the stewards and the police down in front of the cricket field stand. I don't know how he didn't get very far, but that was done. These incidents, George, for all of the progress that we're making off the pitch with our PR and rebranding and wanting to be seen as a good community wholesome club that is relevant for 2023, these incidents continue to put a mark on our reputation.
Yeah, you did. You just jogged my memory then when you mentioned obviously my involvement.
No, we've lost you a bit here, George. We've lost George. Is he back?
Yeah, I thought you might have done. Am I back now?
You're back now. Carry on. We're not going to edit that out because that was funny. Carry on. You might have to start that again, though. Our listeners are like, say what? What are you on about? What are you on about? Carry on.
I just delivered the most thrilling monologue as well. And
you've missed got it. An opportunity to improve it. Start again, my friend.
See, you did just jog my mind then when you mentioned my involvement in the Clarets Trust. So our first meeting with Alan Pearce, and this was a few months after, I believe, the White Lives Matter Burnley flag that flew over Manchester City, because, you know, us booing the knee, or sorry, some of our fans booing the knee isn't anything new. You know, we know about them views in the fan base, which have been around for a long time now. And one of our first meetings with Pace, we asked him, how, you know, what is the club's sorry, I don't want to say agenda, what's their plan to combat,
that's fair,
to combat these views and the expressions of these views at games. And you know what he brought up as well, which I thought was really sad at the time, and I think it's okay to share it publicly now because the players left the club, and it's important that fans are made aware of what impact this kind of thing has on players. When they went in to try and sign Maxwell Cornet, he didn't want to come to Burnley, not because, oh, it's Sean Dyche or his football, or because, you know, we're not that big a team. It was because of things like the White Lives Matter Burnley, the understanding of Burnley having a fan base that, you know, might be called racist by some, and having that outlook. And, you know, because we were tarred with that brush, and, you know, rightfully, we've had the race riots, you know, in the early 2000s, which put Peter Crouch off coming to join. He really had to convince Cornet really hard to come to the club because of it. And we've seen after that, you know, Cornet coming and him having a nice experience at Burnley has done the club a world of good. And since then, we've seen a flood of foreign talent coming to the club and playing well. And obviously with Vincent Kompany, who speaks six languages, by the way, it's really helped with the acquisition of foreign talent. So for incidents like this to be brought up again, and when we were completely in the limelight on Friday night, it was an amazing, amazing opportunity to this image as this new Burnley Football Club to the world. Like Tom tweeted, I just thought it was devastating to then go on Sky Sports after the game. And for my first look at Vincent Kompany's interview, for him to have to be answering questions about booing the knee, it's just disgusting, and it's really disappointing, and it might well set us back because, yeah, it's really not a good look at all.
No. Tom, how do we recover from this? How do we... Because I've seen major brands, major Twitter profiles of major brands tweeting out there saying like, oh, look, you know, racist booing, light has been thrown, pitch invasions, it's like Burnley, we're never away. And it's just like, no, how do we... I don't even think it's a case of convincing people it's a minority, because unfortunately it's more than a minority. I don't think we can hide behind that excuse anymore. But how do we educate this section of fans that their views are outdated, they're unwelcome, and they are just completely inappropriate for society in 2023 when we want to be fair and balanced?
Yeah, it's a question that goes beyond, obviously, Burnley Football Club, or, you know, or Burnley as a town. It's a society as a whole, isn't it? And without wanting to get too much into the politics or anything like that, you know, there's people who are at the very top of, you know, the corridors of power in this country that hold similar kind of views, or that have created a sort of culture in which it's almost acceptable to express these kind of views. So it's not something that I don't think it's something that the club can run an education campaign around that will suddenly stamp it out. The sort of probably the best that you can do at this juncture is to say, I mean, things like what George said there about Maxwell Cornet is just an example. You know, if you're a person who has these kind of views, and you know, as George said, I tweeted about it on Saturday, and I got a lot of people coming back to me and saying, well, we're not booing because we are racist. We're booing. Well, no one actually admitted to booing, surprisingly, but people are against the, you know, the Black Lives Matter, the political movement. People don't want politics in football. Look, if that's your opinion, it's wrong-headed because it's been explained on I don't know how many occasions by the players, by the stakeholders, by the league, that this isn't some sort of political Marxist gesture that the players are doing. It's very simply, and it's a historic anti-racism message that's gone back decades and is not inherently linked to Black Lives Matter. I think some people hide behind that because they want an excuse to be able to boo, quite frankly. But if you're a person who, despite all the evidence to the contrary, thinks that, you know, you need to boo this because it's somehow expressing support for Marxism or rubbish like that, if you think that, just shut up. Just shut up, honestly, because the only message that you give to the watching world, to anyone in the ground, to the black players in the team, to our black manager, the message that you're giving is not, oh well, I agree with your message, but I disagree with, you know, left wing politics in America or whatever. The message that you're giving is, you're doing an anti-racist gesture and I'm against it, and the message is a racist one. That's what it is. That's the impression that you give to the watching world. That's the impression that you give to millions who are watching Friday night, the opening of a new Premier League season. What you're doing by booing is saying, I'm a racist and Burnley is a racist football club. Burnley is a racist town. So, you know, you can educate and you can educate, but some people just don't want to be educated. Some people aren't interested. And if you refuse to kind of come to terms with that, if you just don't think that, you know, if you can't possibly find it in your heart to support an anti-racist message, just do the bare minimum. Do the bare minimum for your club, for your town, for your manager, for your team, and just shut up. Just shut up for 3 seconds at the start of a football match.
Tom, I was literally about to apologise to you for throwing you an absolute horror of a question as soon as I asked it, but that was sublime. Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much that means. So let's give Tom a little break from that, George, and let's just finish off. After everything we've said and after what we've seen so far, a very quick question to end the podcast. Are we going to be okay this season?
Oh, yeah. Do you even have to ask that? More than okay. I mean, I came off the game against City, you know, feeling so joyous in terms of the football on the pitch, in terms of how we coped, how we took the game to Man City. You know, obviously the game was blighted, as we touched on, and rightfully so. And yeah, I must say Tom's comments were absolutely bang on then. I couldn't put it better myself. And like Tom did say, you know, it's the image it leaves of the club. I felt so bad for Luca Colaiocio, in particular, 18-year-old making his debut. But I'd like to give him a great shout-out and say, what a performance from him. So with the likes of Colaiocio going forward this season, he's 18. And Amdouni as well. So all the new signings, for me, impressed. And I thought Bayer, Aldekiel, well, these guys at centre-back, Cullen, Berge in centre-mid. Yeah, I think we'll be more than okay. And I really do stick by my claims that I said, maybe somewhat silly on Sky, that we could push for top 10. Because I, you know what? We've got a good squad and we've got an ambitious manager. So it's going to be a really competitive league this year. And we've seen that with the games at the weekend. But there's no reason that we shouldn't be looking up the table.
Finishes off then. See us out of the podcast, Tom. Are you feeling as confident as me and George? Do you think we're going to be all right this season? And do you think we'll be just surviving? Or do you think we will do George's break into the top 10? I'm sorry, George.
Before the game, I thought I was pretty confident we were going to stay up. It's not really changed my opinion one way or the other. I'm not as big on the performance as a lot of people have been. I thought, especially second half, we were quite flat and disappointing. But I won't judge it really, because we're playing the best team in the world and with a team that we've only put together in a few weeks. So I don't feel any more confident that we're going to stay up based on that performance, but I don't feel any less confident either. I think there's definitely going to be 3 worse teams than us this season, and as long as there is 3, I don't care whether we're 10th or 17th. As long as we stay up, that's fine by me.
Yeah, I agree. I don't care whether we stay up. And you know what? We lost a game we were expected to lose. And if you look at our relegation rivals, Sheffield United, Luton, Wolves, Everton, with maybe the exception of Luton who had Brighton, they all lost against sides that they should be expecting to pick points up. We didn't win against our free hit, so we're in pole position. We are. It's advantage Burnley after the opening game of the season, so long may that continue. That is all we've got time for, listeners. Thank you for joining us this evening. If you're watching this on YouTube, do please subscribe to the channel below and turn on notifications so you do not miss an episode, and spread the word. Who doesn't want to talk and listen to Burnley Football Club? If you're listening to this for the first time on podcast, you can hit that subscribe button and join us through your usual podcast provider. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the None and Ever podcast. Until next time. The None and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Our host and editor is Natalie Bromley, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Rich Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, and Adam Dennett. Our music is provided by George Gaskell, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting noneandever.substack.com. Thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are proud to be associated with the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.